Welcome to the Working Hands Podcast. I'm Tony of Woodline Iron, joined tonight by Keith of Blackthorn Concepts. What's going on, man?
Hi.
I should say joined as always by.
Well, I'm not always here. I'm only here on nights we record.
Okay.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Sabretooth. If you go to sabretooth.com, you can get all your power carving discs and burrs. To me, they're the best ones out there. If you use code WH, you can save 10% on your order. Try it out. Try out power carving or upgrade what you already have. We'd appreciate it.
Yes, and I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Maritime Knife Supply, your one-stop shop for makers, your home for abrasives, steel, tools, and more. Save on shipping by getting everything in from one shipper, one supplier, not one shipper. One of these days, I will get through the full read without messing it up. But you can find Lawrence at maritimeknifesupply.com and .ca.
You messing it up is the best part. No one wants to fast forward because they want to hear what you messed up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's like me, the guy who stutters with S's has to do Sabretooth.
We're just setting them up and knocking them down every night.
Setting them up. We should really swap that one week and really confuse everybody.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I'm not going to mention what it is, but we're recording this before the big event. So if you're hearing this after and something happened there that we're not discussing this week, you'll have to wait till next week.
Yes.
So.
A recording schedule does not allow.
Yeah. It probably could, but neither one of us want to deal with it. So.
No.
What is going on with you, man? What would you like to talk about today?
I don't know. I feel like you've had a few things on the
near
the surface you would like to push up.
Yeah, I don't know. I gotta work up to that. Just got to work on a bunch of stuff that I been busy in the shop. So
yeah, I actually I have to say I'm done my event swap event item.
Oh my god, come up with something else to talk about.
I know, it's terrible.
Yeah,
it's called podcasting two nights in a row.
Yeah, two nights in a row is tough. You run out of, but I'm gonna talk about my past weekend. I went to the Mets game. I went to the last Mets game. So this year I went to opening day, I went to one other game, and then I went to the last game of the season, which, yeah, they're terrible. I get it, but it's still fun to go to a game. And the opening day I went to was, we went down to Miami with the Seven Line Army. I don't know if you know who they are, but whatever. But for my birthday, they're like a Mets fan group, and they have so many games a year that they rent out like a whole section of the ballpark. And then everyone goes and you get gear from them. And so everyone's in orange. They're called the Seven Line Army because the company's called the Seven Line. It's an apparel company.
Oh, okay.
And they make like fun MLB shirts, but just for the Mets. And but they're MLB sanctioned, so they can use like the Mets logos and stuff. So it's cool. So we did that for opening day. But then for my birthday, my wife got me a tour of Citi Field. Which was cool because we got to go in like the press box, like down through the halls, like where the team like would walk around and all the press people. We went up into the press box, like where the writer's room is, like as the game's going on, they're like writing their article or whatever.
Yeah, I gotcha. I did something similar a few years back, at Fenway.
Oh yeah.
That was good. And you can tell she's an old park.
Yeah.
But it's character. It's not like dirty and dungy. You can just tell that it's, you know, there's a lot of history in that park. Cause they take you up through to the Green Monster. You go through the press boxes, you go through what else? There's like, there was something up by the Green Monster that I remember. It's been 5 or 6 years, but, you go up to the Green Monster and they have, what is it? It's the pole. Is it Penske's pole that was hit in the game? I don't
something
know
like that, yeah.
I don't know Sox history that well, so I was never a fan. But yeah, there's some memorabilia around the field that's quite impressive. Like that they hung on to some of that stuff too is kind of a big part for me that's surprising. Sometimes you would think they just would move on, and but there's a lot there. There was, and this might be something at all fields, but they have a ball from every championship team signed and displayed. And I forget where it is in the field, but there's an area where you can go, and there's a lot of Sox memorabilia, but then they have that as well. So every team puts a ball in that trophy case kind of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's kind of neat just to see that they had, I think it was every team. Yeah, it was, because I can remember looking at the Jays 92-93 ball.
Okay.
That was there. Or there was two, well, one for 92 and one for 93. So that was kind of cool, because I was like 10 when they won. So that was kind of a nice memory to look back on.
Yeah. Yeah. Last series the Mets had was when I was 6.
Last World Series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they won, not that they were in. They were in, I think, was maybe that was playoffs in 12. I know they were in 99.
Yeah, they played the Yankees one, didn't they?
Yeah.
Wasn't that 99? Series.
I was in college. I think it was 99.
Yeah. It was the big one. They called it the Subway Series, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, anytime those two teams play, it's called the Subway Series, but that was like the Subway Series because it was a World Series.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think it was 99. It may have been 2000, but somewhere in that range. But yeah, we got to go in. There's like we got to go in early. I don't know if you got to go in early for your tour.
But well, we were there in January, so it wasn't a game day.
Okay.
So, but they were setting up for one of the Winter Classic events. So, okay. And it seemed like they had a bunch of events stacked. There was a college event. There was a couple college events, I think, plus the NHL game, and maybe something else on that as well. Like that, it was like a whole weekend where they were using the ice surface there. And there's always like an old timers game and stuff like that too. So,
yeah, they do tours of Citi Field all year, but we got what's called the game day tour.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it was fun because there's like people walking around and stuff. But yeah, we got to go into there's like a museum, and we got to go in there before the crowds, right? Which normally when there's crowds, you can't read everything or see anything. But one thing that was cool was that they had the Buckner ball there.
Oh, the one that he booted?
Yeah, the one that went through his legs.
Yeah. They have that ball?
Yeah.
Wow. That's that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have Piazza's home run after 9/11.
The Buckner ball. Yeah, no, I forget how much they, like, baseball does hang on to history. So that does, now that I think back on it, doesn't really surprise me that they had like they had revamped the stadium, so they took down the Penske pole, but then they stored it somewhere. It actually was, what was it that they did? Oh, it was the owner had it in their house, like in their garden. It was part of their garden, and then I think either when. I don't know, maybe when ownership changed hands, it came back to the stadium at that point.
Hmm.
I think. I don't know. I don't know the ownership situation of that team, so I have no idea.
I know nothing about it.
But that's what I remember now. They said that the pole, because it's the pole plus the mesh that they have on those on right, the foul yeah. pole. So it was used as lattice for like ivy.
That's so cool.
And it's not like cleaned up. Like it's rusty. It's still paint on it, but it's like rusty and kind of shitty, but it's kind of fun to have that history behind it that, you know, the owner took it as memorabilia and had it in their home had it as part of their home for a while. It's kind of cool.
That is cool. Yeah. I don't follow baseball. I follow the Mets, right? So I don't know what's going on with any other team. Nor do I care. It's not like if they're doing good or bad, it's going to affect the Mets. The Mets are they're doomed before the season starts every year. It's still fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a Jays fan, so I'm having a rough time at times lately. I mean, they're in the playoffs, but then like they just lost tonight, but. Hmm. I don't know. I got a feeling that they could pull it out, but it's going to be a tough one.
Who do you think's going to win? Well, it's tough because you're rooting for them. So
yeah, I'd like to think the Jays could make it, but I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't followed. I'm kind of like you. You follow the Mets, I follow the Jays, and Lil follows the Jays way closer than I do. So
yeah, I would like to see the Brewers win. We were talking about that. I don't think they've ever won.
Yeah, that'd be cool. It'd be cool too. There's some ex-Jays on that team that were like fan favorites, but Rowdy Tellez plays first base for them. He was a fan favorite, but because they moved Guerrero Jr. to first, kind of made him the odd man out.
Mm.
So, and Guerrero was. Last year was pretty solid. He was a Gold Glover last year. This year, a little kind of foot off the gas kind of thing, I think. But he's still definitely a solid first baseman.
I would like to see, I'm just looking at the lineup now, and this could all be changed by the time this airs, but Milwaukee versus Orioles would be the World Series I'd like to see.
Yeah. The Orioles are interesting, man, because they... Like, there was all this hype. Like, I follow Jays. So, there was all this hype about the Jays. You know, they got better. They got, you know, some depth in the outfield with Kiermaier and Varsho, which I think was good because the outfielders they had were, their defense wasn't great. It was, you know, they both could, the two that they traded, could both throw the ball and get, you know, those impressive like outfield assist type ideas.
Right.
But man, they were not tracking a ball some days. It was just like, wow. I mean,
you better be good at the plate.
Yeah. I mean, 90% of the time they were good outfielders, but they were never like, I never found them to be like all-star amazing, you know, major league outfielders. I get that they can play the game 10 times better than I can, but I also didn't make it my, you know, passion in life.
Mission in life.
My mission in life, yeah. So.
Yeah. So this has been baseball talk on the Working Hands podcast.
Yeah. Something different.
Something different. Getting back into making, I get a question for you.
Okay.
I had a comment and it's now gone, so I don't know if they deleted it. I didn't know the account. I had a comment on one of my posts. It wasn't this statement, so bear with me, but it was something like something about having nice tools is how you can make that, right?
Right. It's the age-old argument.
The age-old argument of I can make that too if I had your tools, right? And then
yeah.
I got a comment. It wasn't that comment, but it was to that effect.
Right.
And I responded to it with whatever I responded, which obviously meant that guy delete it. Maybe he was like, oh, maybe not or whatever. Right. It wasn't rude or anything. So I forget what it was because it was at night when I got it. And it wasn't correct English. But then I was on YouTube watching YouTube things and I saw a couple people make a reference to that statement, the old, I can make that too if I had those tools. So I figure I'll bring that up today because I have some comments on that. I have some thoughts on that, on people who comment like that. But, and I generally don't get negative comments. I did get one, which is from some popular blacksmith that was my compliments to your tools. I thought that was a clever dig that somebody threw out there for me.
That is clever.
And Chris won't let me live that one down. Full steam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told him about it. He still makes fun of me for that comment. My compliments to your tools. Part of that is who it came from, which is funny, but I'm not putting that out there.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So what's your take on I can make that too if I had those tools? Because I have a whole genre where it's true.
I think that anybody that's willing to say that, and I think of when I first started in some of the stuff, like especially the smithing side of things, there was a point in time where I would have probably said that. And now that I've gotten into it and actually understand and have a good understanding of the processes and how everything works, it's not the tool that makes the project. It's the craftsperson that makes the project. It's not like, it's not the, yeah, like he, here you go. He's getting his hands warmed up, but it's one of those things. I think we've spoke briefly on it before, where it's more of, a lot of times what it becomes is the better tools make things more efficient, but you can still make the same cuts with a terrible table saw if you have the patience for it and you have the time to mess with it. Like that's where I'm at with it.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that holds up in everything these days.
No? Do you feel that certain tools do make the project?
Yep.
Okay.
I think there's a lot out there being done today where if I had those tools, I could do it too.
Oh, okay.
Digital fabrication.
Yeah. Yeah, there is something to that. I mean,
I don't have a 3D printer, right? But if I did, I could make all the 3D printing stuff people are making.
Yeah, I guess
laser projects.
Yeah.
If I had that laser, I could make that laser project.
That's true. I'd agree with that. I mean, but I think most of the time when you see that comment, it's usually on someone, usually, but I mean, it could be both, but it's usually on someone like that's woodworking or, you know, like bigger metalwork or something like bigger woodworking projects and metalworking projects. Like,
yeah, sure. If you had big stamping dies and everything, you can make a car sheet metal too. But there's also the guys who go out there and hand hammer a sheet of metal and then roll it out smooth and all that. Yeah. Right?
Well, and then there becomes a huge difference in the cost of said item. The stamped item could cost you, you know, I don't know, a Fender, just for argument's sake, say $400 or $500. But if you get, you know, a Jesse James type fabricator hand, like English wheels, a full fender for you, like that's not a $500 fender anymore.
No.
Like that's a lot more because of the time it took to make.
But when you say if I had those tools, don't you throw away all cost anyway? Right? Would cost go out the window? And sure, you know, there could be a better, to bring it back to woodworking or something smaller, there could be a, like, oh yeah, if I had a festool, I can knock stuff out faster. Or I could just get a chisel and make mortise and tenons, right? Or a router and make loose tenons, you know? There's a way around everything, and I get it. There's different craftsmanship levels for each tool that you have. But when it comes to something like 3D printing or lasering engraving on something, all you need is that tool and the knowledge base to run the software.
Yeah, that was my next thought, was there is some knowledge needed on the other side. But yeah, it's not. But I mean, there is what's that Thingiverse I've heard of, that like that's what I think I've seen people in the past do projects.
I know this. Yeah, I know there's some DigiFab people screaming at their phone right now saying, Keith, you're a jerk, blah, blah, blah. You really need to have all the knowledge and the CAD programs and all that stuff. Well, yeah, you do. And you still have to have the creative thing to come up with the idea. But that's not part of the statement. The statement is, if I had your tools, I could make that too.
Well, yeah, some of it, I mean, how else are you going to mold that plastic? I mean, I guess there could be a way that you do
it.
You
could carve it.
Yeah.
Look at Waffle Beaver.
Yeah, true. But I don't know. I think you have a point. I'm just trying to maybe argue the other side, but I
in those cases you need those tools. You can't laser engrave stuff without a laser. You have to have the tool.
Yeah, you're right. And even if you want to do any kind of etching, you have to have, you know, whatever, like you've seen them do the electro etch. You still need a tool.
You have to have that tool.
You have to have a tool to do it. Yeah.
I mean, you can hand engrave it.
Well, I mean, if you want to go that far back, I mean, or keep going further back. Like, it's all you need a tool to do any any of this, really. I mean,
yeah,
rubbing two sticks together will get you fire, but what are you going to do with it after that?
I don't know. All I'm saying is there is a case in point where that statement is correct.
Yeah, I from the perspective you have on it, I would say yes, there is definitely for certain projects. I can't say it holds water for everything, but it does hold water for very specific projects.
Yeah. Oh, I just found it to be an interesting take on something.
Yeah, like I've seen, you'll see now, they're becoming more and more out there as those turntables for welding. And you'll see, you'll see welders welding like exhaust pipes, doing it with
people call them cheaters and all that stuff.
Doing with a TIG, I mean, it's a beautiful product when it's done. I mean, it's hand done and it looks like a machine did it. It's that good. Like I don't know. I wouldn't call them cheaters. I'd just say they're taking advantage of what's out there for them to use.
I'm not calling it a cheater. I'm saying some people.
I know that, but
it's like the late adopters to anything, like people who say using a CNC is not woodworking, you know, a CNC router. I know there's plenty of other CNCs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. And I think we've talked about that before with the like hand tools versus power tools, that kind of stuff where if you gave someone who's doing that same job for profession, there's very few people that would take the hand tool over the power tool. There are examples of people that would much rather, they're more comfortable with hand tools, so that's what they want to use. But like,
or they like the romance of it or whatever.
Yeah, there's that. But if you're doing it as a profession and you're like, you need to pump out product, you need to step into, you know, something that works much quicker. Because it's a very niche market for someone that's going to buy a single Hope chest that's completely handmade and costs, you know, thousands of dollars versus something that can be mass produced and sold for a couple hundred, say. I don't know, just throwing out figures. But one I think is much tougher to make a living on than the other.
Yeah, in some cases it may be impossible in this day and age. There's very few people that want pure hand, like there's very few people who are going to buy something that say I want you to make this, but you can only use hand tools. And then how far back to the hand tool only situation go? Does it go from the lumber yard? Does it go all the way back to the tree? Do you have to cut it down with an axe? Do you have to make the axe out of stone first?
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true.
Like, when does it stop?
Yeah, because that was part of the conversation when I was at New England School of Metalwork. He was teaching us how to do like the forge welding, and some of us had some success, some of us didn't. None of us really mastered it, I felt. But what he said at one point was, he said, there's a difference in this, the words were, there's a difference in the socioeconomic group you can be in with forge weld versus any kind of electric welding.
Oh yeah.
Because your time, effort, and materials is that much more. That a forge weld, very few people are willing to pay for forge weld versus, you know, a MIG gun weld, which is just hot glue, basically hot metal glue. So, which still takes skill, and there is a way to, there is some work to be done to blend it in and make it like look seamless. But what he was saying was, like, you can make the leaf as the finial on the end of this piece, but if you forge weld it, it's going to cost this, and there's less people that are going to say, yes, I like that, I will pay you that price for said item. And there's
the market share.
There's
people that even know what a forge weld is.
Yeah.
It's so small that it's almost not worth doing unless it's requested.
Yeah, and that's, you're right. That is 100%, because I've met so many people over the years now where they find out, oh, you Smith, oh, do you make blades? That whole situation. But when you get talking on the specifics of it, and they're like, there's a lot of people where it's, oh, it looks cool. I'm not sure what they're doing, but like it's different. Like where I took the time and kind of, I took some interest in what they were doing and I kind of dug in and have learned and have met people that have been on the show and have all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting. That's more interesting to me. I just dug into it deeper. And then the average person still could have watched every episode I did. And a lot of them are like, what were they doing there? And then they, mm-hmm. then you have to explain out whatever process that the Smith was doing. So,
but we as makers or people who make stuff, right? Whatever you want to classify yourself as,
right?
We may look at those things differently with a more analytical eye, right? And then you have maker voyeurs, right? Who just like to watch things get made, have no interest in actually doing the work, right? They don't care what the actual process is that they're making. They just like to see something rise from nothing to something, right? Those people don't care if they're watching a blacksmith be blacksmithing something and then forge weld it versus weld it together, right?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Like it's
same goes in woodworking. They don't care if they use a router or a chisel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm 100% that way too. I just want to see when it's like, if I'm paying for something, I want a certain quality when it's done. And as long as I get that, I don't care what the process was to get there.
Right.
I might get interested in it and ask questions, and but I'm not going to be all, oh, why don't you do it this way? So like, I kind of like how that would, like, I'm not going to change someone's process for me. If I'm paying you, if I'm paying you to make me a toolbox out of wood, I'm going to let you make it.
Right.
I'm not going to, I might want certain things like certain size drawers or certain, that kind of stuff. But as far as like what tooling you use or what machinery you use to process the wood, couldn't care less. But there are people who do want more say in that.
Yeah, but that market share is pretty small.
Yeah, because I think for most people, once you start explaining out what it would take to get them the cost associated with certain processes, it very quickly becomes, oh, okay. Yeah, let's just go with what we're going to do first. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see like a historical society or something. Like if you're going to restore an old building, like they're restoring the Notre Dame right now, right?
Yeah.
Or Notre Dame, however you say it over there, right?
Yes.
And they're doing everything the same way it was done, right? And they're bringing in craftspeople from all over the place. But that's for a specific reason. So in that case, I think it's a huge project and those client that like that client wants it done that way. Right.
Yeah. That's yeah. And that's also, you're restoring a piece of history.
Yeah.
So
well, I started with that, with the historical societies.
Yeah. And then, well, I mean, when Chris,
you don't
talks,
have to go that old. There could be an old, like 1800s building in Manhattan, right? That had blacksmith, railings, right? They may want it done the same way. So then, yeah, they're going to ask for forge weld. But I don't think your average consumer is going to be like, oh, you have to forge weld it.
No. And I think Chris talked about that full steam, but that's why the school that he's going to right now is in existence, because that's what they needed. They needed those skill sets for that purpose, because they've got such a historical area in, where's he, Charleston.
Yeah.
So, and it's an area that, you know, it's pretty
rich in history, and
there's a lot of history, and then it's also an area that gets, you know, seems to get hit by a lot of extreme weather. So
yeah,
there's a lot of items that would, you know, disappear from year to year if you didn't have these tradespeople replacing them.
Yeah. But take it into more modern times. When have you seen that reel that goes around? It goes around like, I don't know, once a year, but it's that guy. It's an old video, probably from the 50s. And he's like in a button down and he's doing the drywall and he's got that like hatchet hammer thing that cuts the drywall. And
that is wild. Up, right? Yeah. And fast. It was surprising how fast he was going.
And that's when like drywall came out, right? Maybe, who knows? And, but early on in the drywall venture, right? Could you imagine going to your drywaller now and saying, this is how I want you to do every action for all the drywall in my new house? I want you to do it this way because this is the original way.
Yeah.
Right? That all the drywallers would laugh at you for that. And so would your wallet. You know? Now they just zip it up now and it's crazy.
Yeah, it's funny because I can remember hanging drywall in my parents' house with nails.
Yeah.
We did that.
Those black nails that when you whacked it right, it would clean the black off the...
I don't remember them being black, but I remember them having a textured head. They had like a texture to them so the mud would adhere to them.
And it was a wider head?
Yeah. Not like a roofing nail, but something something similar. Yeah.
Do they even still make those nails?
I don't know.
And I mean, 30 years is a long time, 40 years is a long time, but it's not that long ago.
No. It's just, I don't know. It's surprising that it's changed that quickly.
I wonder, and I don't use too many of the technology tools here. I mean, I do have a laser, but I don't post much about it. And I do have a CNC, which I don't use anymore. But like when I do carving, I use the power carving tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get comments like, that's not really carving, right? You can't call that carving or whatever. So whatever, right? These hand carvers, I get you want your romance for whatever. Do you think it ever goes the other way? Do you think the power tool guys are like, I could make that if I had those tools too? To the hand tool guys, does it ever go backwards? Or is it only a progressive comment? Like people who are jealous of the tools that you have. Does it ever go back to archaic tools? I'm drawing a blank on his name now, but Justin Alborn from Camp Arrowhead. Not the main Camp Arrowhead guy. What's his name? Max.
Max, yeah.
Right? But yep. Justin, he does all the flint napping, right? That's his main thing, all the primitive tool stuff, mm-hmm. right? Do you think he ever has gotten that comment? Or do you think he ever will get that comment on one of his videos? Well, I could do that if I had a stone. I could do that too. Do you think that ever happens in the regressive or is it only progressive? And then if that's the case, is it only jealous people? Like, oh, I'm jealous you have all the Sabertooth stuff. I'm jealous you have a CNC. I'm jealous you have a laser.
Yeah, I think I could do that too. I think it could go both ways. I think it's jealousy of the tool and the skill set. Because for Justin, the tools are very primitive, very easy to make if you have the skill set. And I think if anybody's saying, oh, if I had the tools, I think that they're more jealous of the skill set and being able to make, you know, make stone arrowheads and hammers or axes and things like that.
But then the comment should be, I could do that too if I had your skill set. Well, yeah, you could do everything I did if you had my skill set.
Yeah, but that's not how jealous people work.
I know.
They're not going to say I'm jealous of your aptitude or your ability. It's mainly they'll take it to something that they feel that they can achieve, and for that they can the achievement that they can see that is the easy part of it is the tool. Is it just money?
Yeah.
For the most part, the tool is just
I can buy my way into being a craftsperson.
Yeah. And I mean, that's right some of the time. I mean, for a smith, a lot of the time it becomes the knowledge and skill set, because once you learn how to make certain things, then you can turn that into making tools, because it's the same process as you just apply them in a certain order, and it gives you a chisel, gives you a, you know, all the kinds of different shapes chisels, because it's all just drawing a taper or, you know, flattening out a piece to flare it out so you have a hot cut. Like there's upsetting so you can make hardy tools. There's all kinds of like basic processes which lead into the bigger picture of making making some of the more complex tools. Because like if you look at what Gnome Hammer Ryan did with this hot cut that he just made, well, there's different ways to make that hot cut. you can make that hot cut so it's a hardy hole tool. So it goes in the hardy and you put your piece over top of it and strike down onto it. You can make it like he did where it's on a handle, on a wooden handle that you can, if you break the handle, you can redo it. And then you would use it as a top tool and place the workpiece down and then put the tool on top of it, then strike the top of the tool. Or you could, I've seen them done with where you put metal handles on, maybe they're more durable, maybe there's all kinds of different things, but this all comes back to different skill sets.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Now, do you think there's skill set in setting up a digital fabrication file? Or do you think that would just be knowledge? Is there a differentiation between knowledge and skill set?
I don't think there can be. I think they both, skill set is knowledge. Knowledge is skill set. I don't know. I don't think you can divide them.
Isn't it that knowledge is theoretical and skills are practical?
Yeah, I guess you could put it that way. But I think no matter what, it's still, they still come together at some point. Like even for me, who's more of a physical learner, like I pick up the skill set, but I gain the knowledge from like using my hands. So I think it ties them together. I don't think you can separate.
You could have the knowledge of how to build a box out of wood, but not the skill to be able to do it.
Yeah, I guess.
You could know how it goes together. You could call out all the joints, everything, but not have the skill to actually do it. Right?
Yeah, but that could be just, that could be a timing thing. Like you could have the knowledge, but then that can work into the skill set if you take the time to do it.
Here's my point though. Say you have a 3D printer. You're not the one putting that skill into practical use. The 3D printer is. So is that a skill set or is that just knowledge? That's my question. Because you're not doing it. It's like me telling you how to build a box and then you going and building it. Who has the skill, me or you? Even though I told you how I wanted it built, I engineer it, you're the GC building the job.
Yeah, that makes, yeah, I get what you're saying. Because so then,
is there skill to something like 3D printing or is it just a knowledge base?
Well, I think at least it seemed like with the early printers, I mean, I have no personal experience, but I hear the stories of, there's lots of people out there that it took a lot to keep the things running. You know what I mean? So
You had the
knowledge.
We're talking perfect world here, though.
Yeah, I know, but still.
You have to have the skill set to repair the early 3D printers. I get all that.
That plays into it. But yeah, as they get better and better.
Obviously, I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, I know, and I'm playing along. We're having some fun. We're not getting angry to
your eyes here. Have darted from the camera off to the corner of the basement somewhere.
Oh no,
so I don't know.
That's how my brain works. When I'm thinking, I like look away from people and I just focus on a single point because I believe I have ADHD and people's facial expressions will derail my train of thought. So that's why I turn my. If anybody's talking
to
me,
I'll fix that for you. How's that?
Yeah, there you go. He turns his camera on. But that's always something I've always done. I don't know why. Like, I have the confidence to look people in the face, but I have, my brain will not allow me to stay on track if I'm not fixated on a single thing. If your facial expression changes too much, I'll just stop talking. And I think you've seen that before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And
but back to this. Yeah.
All right. Go back to your point.
It's just interesting. I was thinking about it and then I was like, I wonder if there is a tool that the tool actually matters. And that's when I came up with 3D printing. Right.
Yeah. I think you're right too, because as the 3D printers and like the home stuff, like as that stuff gets better, you do see people producing better quality items. And honestly, from what I get, from what people have told me and what I've heard, it seems like it's the quality of the product a lot of times comes down to the quality of the printer and not the file and not the person pushing start. Like it, there are some things I think at a certain point where you can improve that if you can get into the coding side of it. But yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then, you know, you're going to get the argument from people that is like, well, I printed out two pieces and I had to put it together. So that was practical. So that's skill.
Yeah, but I put IKEA.
That's like calling somebody. Yeah.
I put IKEA. I put IKEA furniture together. It does not make me a furniture builder.
Yeah. Well, maybe to some it does. I don't know.
I don't know. It kind of comes back to the old one where what was it? Oh, if you cut a 2x4, are you a woodworker?
If you sharpen a pencil. Are you a woodworker?
Oh, yes. We're going that far back.
We're going all the way back. Beginning of this podcast.
Yeah. So, and I don't necessarily, I don't necessarily agree with some of that, right?
I don't agree with it. I don't know where you draw the line on any of this. I'm just having a discussion.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't have the answer.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
I don't even know that. I will say that 3D printing is not a skill, but by definition, it's questionable, right?
Yeah, I still think there's some skill in there, but I think that it becomes muddied when you like skill. Is it skill or knowledge? It's like it does muddy the waters when you bring those two sides. Like,
and you know, somebody's gonna say, "Well, it was skill in designing it and drawing it, but that didn't create it."
Yeah,
that's basically the computer knowledge, and that's coming from a career drafter.
Yeah, because I'm sure I've run into things professionally that, you know, there's blueprints or whatever, and you get looking at it, and it's like, that's not going to work. But that's what the engineer wants. So it's, you kind of run into that stuff too.
Listen, I work at an engineering firm. I deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah, I don't deal with that on a daily basis, but it has happened.
Happens all the time for me. And you, yeah, something to ponder.
It definitely is.
Let us know in the comments of this reel, is 3D printing a skill or not? Or anything. If there's a better example, that's just the example I came up with this week.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good one. It is definitely something to ponder. It's one of those never ending subjects. Like you'll never get a right answer. You know what I mean? It's just a revolving topic because someone will have a viewpoint and someone else has a different one. And then they might just talk in circles and they flip positions by the end of the conversation.
Yeah. We're not authorities on the subject.
No.
I don't know that anyone is.
I think this is a
philosophical debate of the maker community.
We're hobbyists at best.
We're breaking new ground here, Copernicus. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you always hide behind that hobbyist rule.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I hide behind it, but I might use it as a crutch.
I mean, I do design stuff for a living, so it makes me a maker at work, right?
Yeah. I'm just a weird guy at work that does stuff in his back shed.
I'm going to leave that one there.
Yeah. Put it out there.
Let's thank those patrons before we piss anyone else off.
Oh. Get people thinking I'm doing some really weird stuff in my back shed.
Oh, let us know the comments on that too.
Oh no, we don't need to know about that. So here we go. We've got Corey of Odyssey CNC, Christy of Twisted Twine, Annette of 513 Woodworks, Full Steam Design by Chris Powell, Lillian Archer Photography, David Beckwith Makes, NB Woodfinery. In our top tier, we have Espoke Studios, Danelle Smith Christian, Brian Drennan, Lawrence of MaritimeKniveSupply.com, Ed Johns of ButtJoints.com, Adam of Uncle Sam Metalworks, Vincent Ferrari of Digitally Creative, Brian Housewort of Workfort Podcast, Artigino Sorio, Matt of Wooden Mustache, Brad of Brad Cut. I was doing so good. Brad of Brad's Customs, David and Joanna at Wido Works, Chad of Chad's Custom Creations, Ryan of Gnomehammer Forge, David of DW Wood Builds, Matt of First Duke Construction, and last but not least, Daniel and Drizzy. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We appreciate the support. It does mean a lot.
Means a ton to us. Thank you all. Any parting words?
No, I don't know how you did it, but you made me talk for like 45 minutes.
I did.
Is that a skill or knowledge? Knowledge based.
That was in practice, so I think that would be a skill.
That was in practice. You have learned how to pry it out of me.
It only took us 118 episodes or so. Oh. I'm getting there.
I like that. We got to do more topics.
Yeah. Skill or knowledge. I think that'll be the title of the episode.
Yeah, that works.
We are exhausted. We got the big event coming up. As we said, we're recording early. So we doing an after show?
We can do a short one.
We're going to do a short after show for you guys. If you're a patron. If you're not and you do become a patron, you're automatically entered into the Waffle from Gnome Hammer, which is another hammer this month. There's so many entries based on the levels.
Yep.
You can also be a patron of his, or you can just outright buy a ticket for 1 month if you want in, or a bunch of tickets, however you want to do that. That's all over on Gnome Hammer Forge's page, so go check that out. If you want to find Tony, he's at Woodland Iron. I'm at Blackthorn Concepts. Both of us can be found at Working Hands Podcast on Instagram. You never know who's responding. Or Working Hands 3 on TikTok, where Tony responds. And if you want to send us an email, you could at workinghands@gmail. Is it workinghandspodcast@gmail? I don't know. One of those.
Yeah, workinghandspodcast@gmail.com.
workinghandspodcast@gmail. But more importantly, if you could share the show, that would be awesome. If you give us a 5-star review and write it out, we will read it here on the podcast. But sharing the show is always the best for us to get more reach. And we will talk to you guys next week with the Super Bowl recap.
Super Bowl, yeah.
The Super Bowl of Makers.
Yes.
So we'll talk to you then.
Later.